The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Oh, 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 oh! That means it's time for Dark Side of the Pooch. Dr. Ram, what you got? Happy holidays to my friend. How you doing, man? Everything good?
Yeah. Merry Christmas and, happy holidays and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
It's a fun time of year, you know. I think for the most part, everyone's in a better mood and it's a little more relaxed and the kids are out of school and, but I know that there are some people out there where Christmas is, it's not, you know, it's not happy. It's a harder time. So, you know, hopefully for some of those people out there, we can give them something to smile about.
We are going to give them something to smile about. He is Dr. Rab Stewart. He owns the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. The number is 205-208-0301, 208-0301, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. And of course, you can find their website as well. And they are the best when it comes to parents. Let me ask you something. How many cats and dogs do you see annually? Do you know?
I don't. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, it's definitely in the multiple thousands.
Yeah. All right. So the man is the best. And of course, he knows what he's doing. And so what we do is we take email questions, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. If you've got one anywhere you're listening right now on the TKR app, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Send me your emails. We'll get into them. And we talk about some other things that is very topical, including today, the best cities to own pets, which I think is very, very interesting. We have a huge influx of pet flu that I want to get into. And I don't know, I know flu is hitting the humankind quite a bit down here in the South. I'm not sure how the pets are dealing with that. We have a Guinness Book of World Record, an old age for a cat. We just broke a record. We'll talk about that. And I'm going to start with a little story here. I just recently moved in some brand new studios here in Hoover, Alabama. Of course, we serve the entire state, the entire country, the entire world. We got people in Yemen. We got people in Mexico City. We have them in Toronto. And of course, right here in the Birmingham area in Hoover. But my dogs are getting situated. You know, I have a Havanese I just brought in a couple of weeks ago for his annual checkup. And I have Rainer, who's an Australian Shepherd. And they're very, very chippy right now as they find their new areas in this new house. So the Havanese is obviously a lot smaller and he's a lap dog and he sits in my chair with me. And then my other one, the Australian Shepherd, comes up and he wants me to pet his head. And obviously there's a growling thing. They start growling at each other. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So they start growling at each other. So I'm like, knock it off. You know, I got two hands. I can pet both at the same time. Well, dude, they go for each other's throats right on my lap. I mean, they're going for it. This is not a barking thing. This is not a growling thing. I mean, they're going for each other's throats. So I want to ask you a question. I had a good friend of mine who had a couple of dogs. He used to live behind me at the old house. And whenever a new dog came in to the household, he just put them in a room and let them duke it out. He's like, put them in a room, let them stay for about 15, 20 minutes. You're going to hear some chaos. And then we'll find out who the king is and we'll be done with it. Should we let dogs duke it out?
I wouldn't leave them unattended because sometimes you'll come back to one of them still breathing and one of them not. I mean, that's a kind of an extreme case, but I would never just recommend that somebody, you know, just put them together either in the backyard or in the room or whatever, and just let them hash it out, because we have had new pets introduced to households and everything seems to be fine for, you know, weeks or months or whatever. And then, an owner will come home and the dogs have been outside while the owner's been at work. And, you know, one of them is covered in blood and the other one is dead. So, you know, you can let them duke it out, but you want to let them duke it out while you're there to break up any problems. You know, probably best to have two people there, have the dogs on a leash, each dog on their own leash that's held by a separate person. And, you know, that way they can be pulled apart if they really start getting into each other.
And so should we let them get after it a little bit? I mean, should we let them start going after each other until the point we feel like one of them's going to get hurt?
I think it's fine to let them establish that pecking order.
Okay.
But so, you know, that can be done with, you know, barking and rallying and, you know, maybe getting one pinned on the back, you know, but once they start like snapping snapping jaws, that's too much.
Okay, and so in the animal world, whether we're talking about hippos or moose or wolves, I know we have alpha dogs, and that dog or that wolf is the alpha until someone challenges him, and it does happen. It happens with buffalo. It happens with every animal sort. How does it work with dogs? Once a dog's an alpha dog, is he pretty much the alpha dog until a new one comes in, or does that ever happen, or how does that work?
Yeah. They're the king of the jungle, or you know, the king of the house, or you know, whatever you want to call it. They establish a hierarchy, and it's not really going to get upended unless something new gets introduced into the herd. I mean, you know, they're a lot like people in that way. You know, you usually have one person that, whether it's a family or a friend group or a team, you know, you've got one person that, you know, carries a big stick, and that translates to the animal kingdom too.
It doesn't matter on the size of the animal, because I asked that question because my Havanese is 11 pounds, my other dog's 50, and my 11-pounder owns the house.
It doesn't matter the size.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, the inverse of what you think would happen is actually what happens. So, the thing that usually makes the most noise is the thing that is usually dominant.
Yeah, that's true.
In any situation, and that's the same with dogs and cats and people. And you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and the squeaky dog, you know, gets the title.
That is true. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We get tons of email questions every single week. Rossbridge Animal Hospital's Dr. Rab Stewart joins us here. Dark Side of the Pooch. You can hear this show 5 days a week on the TKR app. Thanks to the tens and hundreds of thousands of folks who download the app. And of course, wherever you get your podcast, just download Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K. And search our podcast. We're on every major industry. So if you listen to podcasts, you will find us. Before we get to some emails, Shelby County right now is one of the hottest counties in the country as far as in human influenza rates. But I also understand there seems to be an epidemic of influenza in pets and animals across the country. Is that prevalent here? And talk about dog flu a little bit, or cat flu.
We saw a ton of flu cases in the middle, starting in the middle of summer. This year. So I think that our area was way ahead of the trend.
Okay.
And once you have, because, you know, we had the veterinarian that basically discovered the H3N2 canine flu virus. She actually came to town because we had so many cases in the Greater Birmingham Humane Society and so many cases in the community that, you know, we needed her expertise to help kind of get this under control. So, I mean, it was an epidemic. I mean, it was classified as a canine flu epidemic. We have not seen a resurgence of that, at least, you know, at my practice. And I haven't heard it from any of my colleagues that we've had a resurgence in it. But when you have an outbreak like that, you know, it's a ripple effect, and it goes, you know, we take our dogs more places than we ever have before, and these dogs travel, and the virus travels with them. So you get respiratory symptoms, a really bad cough. They'll also act lethargic. The disease usually runs its course in about 14 days. A small percentage of the dogs will develop pneumonia. Unvaccinated dogs will get sick. Will get, you know, the disease worse than a vaccinated dog would.
When you say vaccinated, what are you talking about? The flu vaccine or just vaccinated?
Yeah,
over?
Yep.
Okay. So you can give your dogs flu vaccinations.
Oh yeah. We do it routinely and strongly recommend it, and have for decades.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it's just like in people, the unvaccinated elderly dog population are the ones that are at risk for developing severe flu and maybe a secondary pneumonia. Which, you know, can be fatal, but that's not the norm. You know, usually within 14 days they're all better. It's just supportive care, like it is for us when we get the flu. There's not much you can do. You just have to let it run its course. Be sure the dogs are still eating, drinking, and able to breathe. And, you know, they don't need oxygen and that sort of thing.
Okay. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, 208-0301, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. Of course, you hear the show 5 days a week here on TKR on the Tony Curry Radio app. And also, of course, hear us wherever you get your podcast. There was a great email question. And before we get into that, we have another email question, info@tonycurryradio.net. This is probably the most asked question, and a lot of it has to do with the pandemic and COVID, but what diseases, or are there any diseases that humans can give to their pets or pets can give to their humans? And I'm not just talking about being in the same room. I'm talking about, you know, if I licked the inside of my dog's mouth and he had the flu, would I get the flu? Are there any transmittable diseases back and forth?
Well, we'll talk about the one that is probably the oldest and the one that we know about the most, but for some reason it is still kind of overlooked. And, you know, that's of course rabies. We can get rabies from our pets. And if we had rabies, we could transmit it to our pets if we bit them. So, you know, that's the one that's probably the most, you know, prevalent, even though it may be one that we don't think about anymore because it is so old. Leptospirosis is a disease that attacks the kidneys, and it causes a severe kidney infection. And that is something that's spread by wildlife to our dogs through urine. The wildlife urinates on the ground or in standing water, and the dog drinks that, and then they get infected with the bacteria. And people can get that too. If for some, you know, if a pet owner has a pet that has leptospirosis, or if a veterinary professional is handling a dog that has leptospirosis, then if they come in contact with the urine gets in their body, then that's something, you know, that can cause a lot of problems in dogs and also people. Recently, there was a study done about a very common GI virus called the norovirus, and it's you know, it causes vomiting and diarrhea. And there's some evidence that potentially dogs can get that, and people can get it from their dogs should that, you know, happen, should they be exposed. And then, of course, COVID, that's something that can definitely be spread to cats from people and vice versa. And there's also, you know, some anecdotal evidence that the same thing happens in dogs. Dogs can get COVID from people, and people can get COVID from dogs. Now, there are lots of other what we call zoonotic diseases, and those are diseases that that people can get from dogs. But some of those, they have like an intermediate host. You know, like we've talked a lot about the plague, you know, and that's from fleas, but a flea transmits the plague from a rodent, and the same flea bites a person, and then that's how they get plague. So there's a lot of indirect sharing of viruses and bacteria, but as far as, you know, direct, those are a handful of more prevalent ones.
Okay. Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. This is Dark Side of the Pooch, info@tonycurryradio.net. We'll get some more of your email questions. The National Pet Owners Survey came out and found out that roughly 70% of all households in the United States own a cat and or a dog. And they came out with their top 10 best cities to own a pet. I love throwing these questions at you because I want you to know which cities in the United States. This is based off year-round weather. It's based off whether there's dog parks. It's based off pet care and veterinarians per capita, and also based on walking situations for animals. Do you want to take a stab at any of the top 10 cities best to own a pet in the United States?
I think the Pacific Northwest is going to be somewhere up there. I bet Seattle or like Portland or something.
Whoa, hold on a sec. Hold on. Portland number one, Seattle number five. You're rolling.
And then I would bet somewhere in Colorado, whether it's Denver or Boulder.
Colorado's not in. We got some. We got some cities on the East Coast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I bet New York is high up there.
New York is number three is in there. That's right. Washington D.C. is number seven. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me go a little bit more. I'm sure there's some southern Florida.
There's Tampa. Very good. That's number two. You're knocking these out.
And there's going to be some Southern California.
Southern California. There is no Southern California. So you have number 10, Memphis, Tennessee. Number 9, Honolulu. Number 8, Raleigh, North Carolina. Number 7, Washington, D.C. Number 6, Miami. Number 5, Seattle. Number 4, San Francisco. Number 3, New York City. Number 2, Tampa. And number 1 is Portland. Those are the top 10 cities to own a pet if you want a doggy or a kitty cat. So I had an email question here because one of the reasons we mentioned weather is important. We mentioned walking, pet care, but also dog parks. Sally in Birmingham wants to know Dr. Rab's thoughts on dog parks. I know there's a big, huge dog park that just opened up off Highway 280, opened a couple of years ago. I know a lot of people, and they have a very good system in order to meet your pet. They do all types of, not testing, but they make sure they're vaccinated, everything else, but they want to see how your pet gets along with other pets. But we just talked about, you know, pecking order and alpha dogs and dogs. I mean, hell, my two dogs have lived together for 5 years, and they got in a fight right on my lap. How safe are dog parks just to let your pooch go with other dogs?
Dog parks are really important because, especially in younger dogs, they help socialize. So they're a really important part of a young dog's development. And they're also a really important part of, mature or elderly dogs' ability to exercise, you know, and stay in shape. So they're just the only thing that you really or you need to be concerned about is you're just not sure about the health of the pets that are there. But that's no different than if you take your kid to a playground, and playgrounds are awesome and they're super fun for kids. And it's just, you know, because you can't let a possible fear of, you know, getting a respiratory disease or getting a GI disease or, you know, your dog getting into a little tussle. You can't let those things keep you from letting your dog have a fun time. So you just have to be aware of some of the things that are possible. Be sure that your dog's on flea and tick and heartworm prevention. Be sure your dog's up to date on pertinent vaccines. And if your dog is not feeling well, just like in us, don't take them.
Yeah. And you mention this all the time, and I know it's a pain because we just want to let her. And I know there's a couple of new dog parks down in City Walk as well. There's some fenced in areas. You just let your dogs run. But those are not, there's no one looking at whether your dog's vaccinated, what kind of dogs get in those areas. So if you do take your dog down there and just decide to let it run, realize the risk factor there. But you always talk about leashing. I mean, I know people don't want to leash their dog, but it's such an important teaching tool. Not only that, but to leash your dog in the house so you can actually control where it goes and how it goes. Is so vitally important. So if you're a little wigged out about going to a dog park, put it on a leash and just keep it by your side until you can figure out how it's going to react, correct?
Yeah, that's really important. Because a lot of these dog parks have areas where, you know, it's kind of free range. You know, they may have a little an area where the dogs can be off leash. So even if you're in an off leash place, you can still get in there and have a leash on your pet and be sure that all the dogs in there are going to, you know, get along and you're not going to have a Cujo.
Yeah. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Give them a call. I know they're booked up as far as in boarding goes for the holidays, but come January, we'll hit the ground running. It's going to be a great 2023. Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, of course, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, 208-0301. They've always got room for your family members, so check them out. We've got the world's oldest cat that just turned this age. I'm going to find out if you know what that age is coming up in a few minutes. Sally in Baton Rouge says she has a friend that said she lost her chihuahua to a scorpion bite. Now, a lot of people don't think we have scorpions down here in the South. We do. They're not quite as poison. I know this because I lifted up a hot tub one time, and there must have been 60 scorpions underneath my hot tub, and I didn't know that scorpions actually existed here in the South. But she says that she's got a friend of hers that lost a chihuahua to a scorpion bite in Baton Rouge. We're not talking those big James Bond scorpions that you'd see out in the West Coast or in the desert. Have you ever heard of such a thing? And what other insects can harm our animals?
First of all, my wife is deathly afraid of scorpions.
Dude, I saw it. You ever watch Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe?
I love that show.
He had an episode on the other night, and it was a scorpion sweeper out in Phoenix, Arizona. where this guy's hired by the hour to come out and sweep through a house and the outdoor area. The dude caught 120 scorpions in 1 hour outside this home in Phoenix, Arizona. So they are relevant.
Oh, yeah. And you see them from time to time here.
They glow in the dark at nighttime. You flash an infrared light and they glow. They grow in the dark. That way you can find them.
Yeah, and I've never seen a live one here, but I have seen dead ones, you know, from time to time. And usually, like, I remember when we were, you know, house hunting, and you would go in an empty house that's been vacant for a little while and find a dead one on the floor. So, you know, I guess they're just like any other, you know, insect, you know, because, I mean, technically that's what they are. But I have never had any experience with of sting from a scorpion in a pet that I know of. But it's like in the Southeast, I lived there for a brief time after vet school, and they were, you know, you'd hear of, you know, scorpions getting into horses and stuff like that. But I don't have any experience with that.
What about bee stings?
Oh, yeah. So, you ask about other insects. Mm-hmm. Well, spider bites and fleas and ticks. I mean, fleas and ticks are going to transmit way more diseases that kill more dogs than like something exotic like spider bite or a bee sting. You know, fleas and ticks are responsible for just, I don't know what the number is, but I mean, it's got to be in the hundreds of thousands of in the U.S. The spread of disease, you know, whether it's Rocky Mountain spotted fever or Lyme disease, leishmania, Ehrlichia, you know,
what's leishmania? What's that?
Those are all bacteria. They're spread by ticks.
That sounds like something you made up.
No, it's real. It's real. So it's a tick-borne illness. Those are the main insects that are going to cause problems. And some of these things can be hard to diagnose.
Because you don't see bite marks, right?
Yeah, you don't see bite marks, and you know the symptoms are just nondescript. You know, sometimes they'll have lymph node enlargement, and you know you'll see that with tick bites as well as flea bites. So lymph node enlargement or just lethargy, you know, they just seem like they're achy. So they can be kind of tough diseases to treat. That's why prevention is so important.
I love this email from Jill because you've told this story a couple of times, but we always go a little further with it. Jill in Hope, Alabama has heard her story about you caring for a giraffe. She wants you to talk about the giraffe you cared for. And she also wants to know what other strange exotic pets that you've cared for in your internship or any time during your life. And what animal would you like to care for?
So the giraffe story was from my internship when I was working on just horses in South Phoenix. And there was a guy there who had he had his own zoo, basically. He had giraffes, he had camels, he had zebras, and then he had like the standard stuff. You know, he had some horses, but there was really no one around. There's not a vet school in the whole state of Arizona. Well, I mean, maybe they've gotten one in the last few years, but I don't think they have. So, you know, it's not like there was a, you know, like a school there that could take care of exotic animals. So these kind of, you know, quote unquote zoo animals were left in our care. And so one of the giraffes had a baby and we went over there just to basically do the same kind of exam you would do on a new foal, which is a horse,
yeah,
a new foal exam on the giraffe. And, I mean, it was just mainly, you know, listen to its heart, check it out, you know, be sure it didn't have any, you know, birth defects or things that, you know, could cause problems down the road. And the giraffe was fine, but I mean, being next to a newborn giraffe was really cool. It was exactly as tall as me. So it was, you know, a little bit over 6 feet tall. It was pretty crazy that something, you know, that young is that tall. But there was another, when I was a senior in vet school, maybe we've told this story, maybe we haven't, but there was a zebra that was found on a baby zebra that was found on Interstate 85.
No.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. There was a baby zebra. And so it was hurt and it was in the middle of the night and somebody found it and they brought it to the vet school because, you know, a zebra is a horse.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just a funky looking horse. So they brought that zebra to that school, and I, you know, just so happened that I was on my horse rotations, and so we were responsible for taking care of this zebra, and it just had some, well, first of all, it needed to be just have some TLC because it didn't have a mom anymore. It was a baby,
Yeah.
and it had some exterior wounds, so you know we had to kind of doctor that and just get it ready to be released. And I'm not, to be honest, I'm not really sure where that thing ended up going, but it got better. But that thing was mean as the devil. I mean, it
Really?
would try to bite and kick, and oh my gosh, yeah. So I think that what the story was is there was somebody transporting it, you know, for some reason, whether, you know, and it just it I think we think that the trailer was damaged, you know, like maybe it got in a wreck of some kind. But I think the whole deal was a little bit shady because there was never a car found, or you know, it was just like parts and pieces of a trailer. So I think something, you know, kind of under the table was going on, and they were like, "Well, screw this. We're just leaving the zebra here so no one asks any questions."
That's insane. As a matter of fact, you know, it's the holidays, and so I decided that I was going to go pull up on Google if you could buy a giraffe, and you can actually buy a giraffe. They're about 20 grand. If you want a baby, it's about 40 grand. But if you want to buy an actual giraffe, you can pay $20,000 for one.
Oh man, just in time for the holidays. Bring home a giraffe.
Yeah. He's Dr. Rab Stewart. Just a couple more minutes here. 208-0301, 208-0301, area code 205, Rossbridge Vet on Twitter. The Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook is always rocking. Check it out. Info at tonycurryradio.net. You can listen to the show. We've got, gosh, 50, 60 shows we've done. You can listen to as many shows as you want. And of course, hear those first run shows on TKR. In London, we just set a Guinness Book World Records for Flossie. It's a cat. And it just turned this age. Do you want to take a stab at how old this cat just turned?
So these things are always surprising because in my head, I think that it should be a certain age, and then it winds up being way older.
Yeah.
So in my head, this thing should be 23 years old, but I'm going to say it's 30.
27 years old. So you're right smack dab in the middle. 27 years
Yeah.
old. The record was 26 years old and 349 days. And Flossie just turned 27 last week. Do you want to take a stab at how old that is in human years, at least according to these veterinarians?
According to the veterinarians, this cat is 127 years old.
120 years old. You're close. You know exactly what you're talking about, brother. That's pretty good.
Well, some days.
That's pretty good.
Some
And
days.
so for people like trying to do the math that are trying to go, wait a minute, 7 times 27, if you've listened to the show here, Dark Side of the Pooch, you realize it's not 7 years for every year. It comes averaged out to 7 years if your animal lives to be 10, 11, or 12 years old. But when you got one that's going 27, all bets are off for sure. Dr. Rab Stewart, thank you so much for your time. What you got going on for the holidays? Share a little holiday cheer for us. Give us some words of wisdom over the holidays, and then talk about what you got going on in 2023.
Well, just, you know, remember why we have Christmas, the birth of Jesus. So sometimes that gets lost. So just to, you know, enjoy spending time with your family. That's what I'm going to be doing. And just trying to remember that it's not about the presents. You know, it's fun to get presents. You know, it's not about the lights, it's not about the tree, it's about Jesus. For 2023, I mean, it's the same as it is every year. You know, every day you just try to do better at work, and try to do better with your family, and try to do better with others. So it's the same goal every day.
There you go, brother. Hey, man, thank you so much for your time. It's been a stellar year. We're going to catch up coming up the first week of 2023. And always, I love you. Keep in touch with me. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to the entire family. I love you, man.
All right. Love you guys.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.